you know, I sell a pound of coffee to somebody, they're now responsible for all the work that went ahead of it. If they don't measure that coffee outright and grind it properly, they'll miss the experience.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the First Crack Podcast. I am still Garrick Van Buren. And in putting this conversation together, I realized why it's taken me so long to get to number 100. It's because the podcast itself, First Crack itself, was waiting for this conversation. How to Cup Coffee with Jeremy Raths. Theme music by Jeremy Piller. This is probably the fastest conversation I think we've had. It's probably 20 minutes long, but it goes so quickly. It's packed full of information on what cupping is, how to do it at home, how to maintain the integrity and the responsibility of the cup of coffee. All from a guy that teaches how to do this to the people that grow it themselves. So, with that, tell me what you think. firstcrack@gmail.com. Comment over at firstcrackpodcast.com. I think that's it, man. Enjoy, and thanks for press and play.
2 tablespoons of coffee in a 5 ounce to 6 ounce ceramic. I prefer ceramic. Some people use glass. Bowl.
Okay.
Boiling water poured right on top of it.
Ah.
And then you let it steep for 3.5 minutes.
Almost like a tea.
Yeah, but it's much stronger than a tea.
Right.
Forms a little cake over the top.
Oh.
Called a cake or a crust. And then you open that with the side of your spoon. Put your nose right down in there. Inhale. And then record. What are you sensing? Put it on your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And what is this? And then you let it cool slightly.
Okay.
And then you taste it. And then when you taste it with your spoon, you spit it out so you don't open up your epiglottis.
Ah.
And then once again, you record. What is that sensation? What's the acidity? What does it remind you of? What kind of fruit? What kind of citrus fruit or grape? Or is it a medicinal acidity?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it kind of a sour? Yeah, it's highly acidic, but it tastes sour. You know, so you start to develop your own vocabulary and your own judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not objective at all. It's a totally subjective activity because we're all totally different people.
Right.
We bring everything we have to the cupping table.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're feeling blue that day, you'll cup very different than if you're feeling happy. Because your emotional awareness, how you feel, affects how you roast and how you cup.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not aware of those, then you affect the way you pronounce judgment on the coffee.
So you got to check yourself.
Check in. Yeah. You gotta, how do I feel today? Should I even bother cupping? I just had a fight, you know.
Right.
You should never play golf, roast, or cup coffee after having a fight with anybody.
I think that's just a good rule of thumb, yeah.
Don't do anything. Just go somewhere and shut up. But what the SCAA has been involved in many years is trying to develop a cupping form so that there can be international juries to determine the value of the coffees. But because it's such a subjective nature, you're trying to put an objective number or a value to a product. And it's incredible how 30 people can get in one room, cup the same coffee exactly the same time, and have 30 different experiences.
Yeah.
And so for us to say, well, that's the best coffee, it's like, I don't think so.
So what you got to do is get like, do a emotional assessment of those 30 people up front. And this is the best copy if you're feeling kind of blue today.
How did you vote in the last presidential election?
Right, yeah. You have all these qualifiers and adjectives to describe and wrap around that best coffee, yeah.
But the more cuppers you have, the more you can arrive at a consensus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you can throw out the high and low guy and then have some sort of a decent evaluation of that coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's always valuable to cup with somebody else. Because you know that you're both going to arrive at it differently.
Gotcha.
And that helps you evaluate the coffee and not your own tasting.
Nice.
Because when we're cupping, we're not judging ourselves. We're trying to judge the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the cupping is, it's one of these wonderful experiences. And if you cup all day long, you get into an incredible rhythm.
Yeah.
And it's just this sensual awareness, and you're just really focusing on the coffee. And it becomes such a small world, but a huge world at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're enjoying everything about that coffee. Even if it's bad, you're enjoying identifying that characteristic.
Ah.
So it's this constant activity, and you just become incredibly mellow. You just center out, and it's just, you just enjoy it so much.
Mm.
That very first sip, the smell, everything about it. And it's just a great way to spend a day, is to cup a lot of coffees.
Yeah.
And then you get totally emotionally fatigued because you are so involved and you're just worn out.
I'm assuming that this is something that you do regularly. Is,
yeah, cup coffees.
And for a day long?
Not just the competitions or the trainings.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know, when we went to Uganda and Kenya in mm-hmm. January, we had 30 people in our class that we were training how to become aware of their own selves.
Oh, okay.
And what can they taste? You know, what can they identify, and then how they can keep a process going so they can use that identification process
mm-hmm.
to evaluate coffees. And we use, the very first thing we do is we go out and buy everything we can in the market.
Okay.
Fruits.
Oh.
Nuts. Spices.
Gotcha. Not just coffee, but all sorts of
dirt,
produce and everything.
Stones. And you just want to make people aware of the connection between their senses and their brain.
Mm.
And then start to identify words that help them tag what that sensation was. And so that's always fun, because somebody will taste a sour,
right.
lemon, and their taste is different than the guy across the table. Some people cannot taste at all. There's 25% of the population that has such a limited amount of taste buds, they cannot taste. They'll never be good cuppers, no matter how hard we try. Sorry, go do something else. And then there's 50% of us,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in this group,
okay.
of course, that can have enough taste buds to use that to identify and develop a vocabulary and a library and a database, if you want, of sensations.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 25% of people,
those super
mostly
tasters.
Women, who are super tasters. And they can identify a lot more stuff than mm-hmm. I ever could dream of.
Mm-hmm.
They find the little nuance. And, like, of course, sometimes that's very confusing, and they get overwhelmed
right.
with trying to describe it, especially to us who can't ever figure out what they're talking
about.
I've never had that experience.
To begin with, let alone compared against this one.
Yeah. You have the guys taste, or the gals taste, a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
A lemon. And then you say, what does it taste like? And they go, fruity.
Right.
Okay. So you put fruity up on the board. And you go, okay, now let's start working on what that really means.
Okay.
You know, so heavy-bodied, what does that mean?
Mm.
Or it has body. That's meaningless unless you start to describe the body itself. Is it raspy? Does it feel like sandpaper on your tongue?
Ah.
Or does it feel like syrup or butter or milk? Or oil,
mm-hmm.
what you think oil would feel like on your tongue. Or a tube of toothpaste, you know, when you squirt just toothpaste. You've done that, of course.
Yeah.
And you feel it on your tongue. It's much like that.
Uh-huh.
Kopi Luwak is like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tubular, which is weird. But that's the sensation that helps me feel it in my brain.
Okay.
You know, when I use that word, I can remember that.
Mm.
So that's what we do, is to help folks figure that stuff out.
Nice.
So they can say, this is dynamite coffee. I want $50 a pound for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't buy coffee. We don't buy roasted coffee as non-roasters and drink it as if we were cupping it. So I think there's a difference, right?
I think you can do a press pot and get the same experience.
Okay.
Because the press pot has nothing between the coffee and the water. So you get much better extraction.
Gotcha.
And you
no filter, that sort of thing.
No filter, okay. Right. And then you can also determine the time properly.
Oh, right, the 3 minutes. And,
yep, gotcha. And plunge it. So, okay. Yeah, the press pot is the most preferable way for me to drink coffee.
That was where I was going with this question, because there's, I would think, a difference between the flavors and the taste and everything that you get out of the cupping. They would be much more subdued.
Definitely.
In the brewed cup.
Right.
Right.
And then, you know, I sell a pound of coffee to somebody. Mm-hmm. They're now responsible for all the work that went ahead of it.
Right.
If they don't measure that coffee outright mm-hmm. and grind it properly, mm-hmm. they'll miss the experience.
So give me some rules of thumb on
measuring out. 2 tablespoons.
2 tablespoons per
8 ounce cup.
Okay. And the grind is going to be slightly different on what your brewing method is.
The shape of your filter.
Oh.
Yeah. Cone filter, you want a little finer grind.
Okay.
Flat bottom filter, just a slightly coarser.
Huh.
And then press pot, you almost want it like a percolator grind, which is the same grind that we use for cupping.
Okay.
And kind of not chunky, but you can see chunks in there.
Mm-hmm.
And not too many fines, because the fines are the real dusty thing.
Okay.
And if you grind it, if you take a grinder, like a lot of people have these blade cutters.
Right.
And you just do it for 20 seconds. The grinds will be leveled in the grinder itself, even though it does stir it around a little bit.
Okay.
But down at the bottom, mm-hmm. you'll see all these real fine things. And if you put those, if you just took the fines out and brewed them, you would have an incredibly bitter, over-extracted cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So the grind, the size particle is immensely important to the beverage in your cup.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if we do all this work, if there's 80 people that touch that pound of coffee
right.
and get it to you,
mm-hmm.
you can screw it up.
You know, have 80 people shaking their heads at me.
Going, what the hell? All that work down the drain. And a coffee roaster,
mm-hmm.
all that work, 79 people touch it before I get it.
Right.
And then I doze off, and boom, it's gone. And now it's not just one cup.
Right.
It's 5 or 6 pounds. And if you're doing a big roaster, it's mm-hmm. 528 pounds.
Wow.
All that work is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it requires everybody to pay attention to what the hell they're doing. If they want a good cup of coffee. If they want a caffeine.
You don't often think of all that work when you... when you lift up the cup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
80 people. And it's connected to everybody in around the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's the coolest part. And then you travel to origin,
mm-hmm.
and you see the people. You see where it's done, how it's done. You see how much care they put into that product and integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get paid shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool. If the green's selling for $1 a pound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they still feel so strongly about doing it right. Which is just an overwhelming experience.
Mm-hmm.
That they're going to do it right, and they hope to get a good product out.
Right.
And for us to take that and not care about it, we lose the integrity of the product.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone. And then you let it sit in your freezer for a month.
Yeah.
Or worse yet, it sits in some warehouse for 6 months and it puts on a grocery shelf mm-hmm. for another month. There's nothing left.
Wow. Thank you, Jeremy.
Oh, thank you.
This has been a fantastic
It's been very fun
conversation.
Thanks. Excellent.